Welcome to the February 5th use case realization call. And we are still just gathering, sort of, so I'm taking, noting who's here. And if you have an issue being recorded, of course, you can stay silent or drop. Still can't find a bit of for some reason. Having a problem with this directory lookup. Sometimes you just can't find people we know or in the system. Very strange. Anyway. I think I just saw. Oh, sorry, Fernando. All right. So these were the potential things that we were going to discuss today. I'll just kind of go over some of the items here. So there, as we are now, actually there's proposals from ALA that you can actually submit new requirements into R7. It's time to talk about, I think, what we want to document for our use case / requirements in R7. And Andy Mayer is on another call, but he told me he'll join about 15-20-ish minutes into this call. So that kicked off a discussion with Ala, and she suggested that, well, first I was going to present this on Ala's call, and then she suggested, well, that, when I showed her the template, she said, well, that's kind of more architectural level type work. It's a little bit more detail, and she wants to focus her meeting on super high level business driver type requirements. So I said, okay. And she actually suggested this meeting be this all, you know, the work be moved under the architecture. So I have contacted Chakar, who's the new PTL of architecture, and so he suggested that, or well, Ala suggested that, because this is more focused on sort of getting things done and the architecture level type stuff and talking about what we need to realize use cases. And she wants to keep her meeting at a super high level, just proposals. I said, fine, no problem. And I've contacted Chakar about that. Fred had sent some, from Verizon, had sent some, had mentioned last week about some slides on golden parameter templates. So, we'll eventually be talking about that. So eventually I'll be joining that at some point with him. I'm still working out when he might want to join and do that. So there has been, and I see Ted Johnson's on the call, there's been a VES update, so we'll talk about that in a bit as well. The ONS conference happening in April 2022 is coming up. New R7 requirements, and then of course I'll give you an update on the way of working process. Last week we talked about the 5G use case modeling, and I've also presented that on the briefly on the modeling call this week. And so that's definitely going to take, you know, that's quite a that'll take quite a bit of time to get some traction on that, I'm sure. So if we know that's a long lead item, it's not a, you know, it's not something that's fast. So I think the best way to do that is, I've been tracking and sort of recording items to talk about, and I'll probably hold perhaps some side meetings, one-offs to tackle that. And by the way, I need to take just a quick aside here with Zoo. So we have, let's see, you mentioned that, the piano software upgrade call overlaps with the modeling call tomorrow.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, okay, let's see.
That's a
But
wonderful.
I've kind of always had this meaning at this time, so it's weird. We didn't overlap before.
I did. You took our bridge, and I had to book a
Oh,
separate bridge
I see. I see.
to keep
Okay,
the
sorry about
meeting
that.
going.
Sorry about that. Okay, so I need to find a way to. I guess I'll just host on my own separate offline bridge then. Okay, thank you for letting me know about that. So, okay, so I'll try to find a time that we can reschedule to a different time then. Okay. So go ahead and hold your meeting, and I'll let everybody know we'll be on a different bridge. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Yeah. Okay, I see a couple other people joined here. All right. I'm not sure who's on this number, but somebody's on that number. Okay. I just wanted
It
to
may be
also.
me.
Oh, hi.
It may be Ben. Sorry.
Melanie or Marcy?
I arrived. Melanie.
Okay. Okay. And just to let you know some of the things that are coming up here. So today we'll be talking about the new structure, this new template that Andy's going to present, the way of working process. Ted Johnson is due to present next week on this model-driven Yang processing tool. is that still okay with you, Ted?
Yeah, that's a good time.
Okay, great, fantastic. And then Lukasz, I've been in contact with. He's on February 19th, is going to be presenting on the PNF plug-and-play SO workflows to building blocks. I'm currently in contact with several people about what might be happening on February 26th. I've contacted Morgan Richomme, the new PTL of integration. So March 5 is actually the M4 milestone, and so I thought that it might be a good time, because we already have something scheduled on March 4 to talk about integration. so I've reached out to him, and I'm waiting to hear back from him. This is the meeting that I mentioned, the presentation that I mentioned about Fred, who might be giving something down the road. So the next presentation after that, Swami is going to be talking about the updated network slicing overview and technical discussion. So when the network slicing team presented in November 20th, there were lots of questions and a lot of open points the team felt. So I think they're going to they've gotten a lot more traction, a lot more definition, I think. So they will be hosting another overview discussion on March 4th. I contacted Yuri to talk about to give a presentation on CC SDK and end-to-end automation, and he said sometime in March or April would be good for him. So we'll be looking for that as well. This way of working thing is so I'll probably present some of it today and let you know what's going on there. but this is a definitely a long lead sort of thing. It's not something that will be done quickly, and we probably will want to may either spend some time or another session, or maybe when we have some spare time, or I may start part of it and have you guys help out. But I'll present some of this today so you see it, and I'll let you know what I or have been presenting in the modeling team and the architecture team this week, so you're plugged in. And then, of course, this new PlugFest is happening. This next PlugFest is happening in June. So we'll want to spend a little bit of time talking about that as well, what the next demos are and things we want to be doing. Okay, so let's see. So some of you joined when I had already gone over some of these things. So let me just quickly touch on these again. Andy's going to be presenting on this new R7 use case release requirements template. This group, this team, you know, this meeting is, or the stuff we're doing is kind of going to be moving under the architecture homepage. So right now, Ala started a new requirements page, and so I think we'll be hosting, you know, this sort of table and this information, rather than being under the her meeting, will be, I think, under architecture. Okay, so without further ado, let me jump into what I've been looking at the way of working. And some of you have already seen this, and as I've presented this numerous times, at least in part or quickly, so, and many of us are on the same calls at various places. So hopefully this isn't, it might be for a couple people, but hopefully this isn't completely new for most of you. okay, so what I've been doing in the past maybe few months with the modeling team, and they give me, you know, some time, they try to give me some time every week to talk about this or to work on this, is to develop a way of working, a process, a more defined process page, which captures what the modeling team is doing at various stages. So because it's modeling, I'm not going to spend too much time here on that, but gives you a sense of, you know, what happens in, you know, what might be better is let me go over the overview slides here. It might be better, hang on. All right. So if we take a look at what happens let me just go to the use case one. I think that'll be more relevant to here. Okay. So what happens in our, you know, we work use cases, right? Early on, and this may change if we move away from a waterfall model, so we'll adapt it if that happens. But right now, before I'm zero, we propose use cases and requirements, and we create a base use case page. We start to define our epics and stories and high-level requirements and business drivers moving into M1. And of course, M2, we're defining our, starting to define some of our APIs, and then M3, we're delivering the APIs, the API freeze, and starting to work on our software, thinking about updating and defining the ethics and the BNF requirements, defining and working our data models, and then heading into M4, we have code freeze, and then of course, at RC 01 and 2, we are doing integration. We're proposing use cases, we're defining them, we're doing use case design and development and test. And so the point is, like, where, you know, are there points where we can index or cross reference or meet up or sync up with other teams? So I think at some point it would help if we have a more structured way and touch points of where we interact with other teams at defined points and to have a better sense of what we need to share at these different gates and at these different milestones. So as we define new use cases and proposals, we should be engaging the modeling team and figuring out where we might have model impacts. and as we start to define use cases, we can plug into the architecture teams to see if there's component architecture impacts or functional architecture definitions that will impact. And then, and of course, the modeling team is working on their input model. And then as we move into M2 and M3, we're starting to do our design, and the release information model is going into their clean state, and the the functional architecture, if you haven't, I'm sure you know what it is, you just may not have been aware of the term. This is the functional architecture, right? So the every release, there's updates to the functional architecture, and if you attend the architecture meetings every week, and they just talked about this, about it this past week, right? So, and then into M3 and M4, there's an API documentation freeze, and all the teams are actually working on the read the docs, right? And we're delivering our software deliverables. So this might also help to see this flow as well. So from a modeling standpoint, the high-level requirements are captured in the release requirements page. And then there's an input model that is created, which is at the start of the release. There's a release information model that the team, that the modeling team starts with. And then each of those, they're called contributions, are reviewed essentially and discussed, and then they come together to create the release information model. Once the release information model is reviewed and clean, it feeds into the data models that the teams need to work with, and those feed eventually into the APIs. So we see here basically as they go into M2, each contribution, and many of these contributions will be often related to, well, not specifically, but are often going to be related to a use case. So basically what happens is they have a input contribution, it goes into a discussion state where they're updating and reviewing things, and then it goes to this clean state. And basically the aggregation of all these contributions creates the release information model that serves as the information model that the use case teams will be working. And one of the major checkpoints is when in the modeling that information model becomes clean, the modeling subcommittee should be engaging us, the use case teams, and vice versa. We should be aware of also what's happening and that the information model is ready to be used, and that it's at a point where we can build from a stable point and for our data models. And likewise, when I think the architecture, reference architecture, and the component architectures that are being worked, or flows and component descriptions are being worked, that Tracker's leading, it can be considered, actually, the modeling team has said actually that it can be considered that some of that release information model is actually kind of an architecture work as well. So with that in mind, basically, I sort of described in words these pictures here, but let me show you the what I've been doing with the modeling team as a group. So they've been really good. As a group, they discuss I'm kind of taking notes for them essentially. So they discuss. Let me just zoom in here. So they discuss what does the modeling team do. So at M0, they're looking at model planning. They're looking at new use cases. They're thinking about what they need to refine in their existing model, forward looking work that needs to happen. And as the use case teams are similarly evaluating proposals and looking at M0 requirements that they and the business drivers, the modeling team at M0 is also doing a lot of planning, which leads to this page here. And this page really captures all of the major modeling activities that they plan to do. So there's five categories. There's stuff they're definitely doing up there, the stuff that's documentation only. There's stuff that's capturing modeling after the software has already been delivered. So something that was done in a prior release they're catching up to. And then things that are, like I'm working on the 5G service modeling, there's stuff that's kind of exploratory that's not gonna affect the model potentially in this release, but there's a long lead time work, so it's of lower priority. And then stuff that's experimental that might get pushed out. So they're doing that kind of planning there. And then at M1, they finish that planning, and all of these topic things you'll notice are kind of from this page. So they should basically also be engaging the use case teams and vice versa. So the I see Andy joined. Hey, thanks for joining, Andy. So I was just going over, which of course Andy's very familiar with. He's contributed heavily to inputs, and so is Zoo and other people on the call to this process. So at this point, the use case teams should be engaging the modeling team and vice versa to socialize, what they think the inputs are, and to help the modeling team understand what the model impacts would be. And then M2, the modeling subcommittee is doing that diagram I showed you. They're basically at a point where they're taking the these contributions and putting them together into this release information model. And that's kind of what this is. I have the picture there. And then basically the use case teams, us, right? So we are now working on our data models. So here, if you have data model impacts, of course, it would be good to engage the modeling team, either attend their calls or let them know we have impacts and they can help you evaluate things that you will have impact to. So that's a good socialization point, basically, where you can engage the modeling subcommittee and hold a information data model review and development and get input from them and map stuff between the information model, the existing information model, the data model, because they're very familiar with the information model, so they can help you figure out where your stuff might need to belong. Coordinating JIRA tickets and holding joint reviews and sync ups. So that's what, I don't know, yeah, okay, I did put the picture here. So that's what kind of this is, right? There, at M2, there's a good point where there's basically sync ups that should happen. And then at M3, where the release information model has been baselined, the modeling team continues to do stuff after that. There might be tweaks and refinements that come out of working on the data models that may impact the release information model. There's stuff that could still be in progress in the release information model, even though the model is clean and baselined. There are potentially some things that are in experimental state. So there are, there's a ever growing sort of conveyor belt of things that are happening, and juggling and managing all those things could still be happening in at this stage. And then of course there's stuff that they recognize as future work. Like for example, various people are working, myself included, on the geolocation stuff and the modeling stuff there that's happening. We know that's future work, and we're continuing to work on that in preparation for actual modeling work happening in a future release. This documentation after implementation and a prior release work sounds sort of nebulous, but basically it's the modeling catching up to software. Maybe there was some software already done, and modeling work still needs to happen with that. There is also an M3 checklist, which, if you're not aware, is kind of interesting. So basically, has the project team completed use cases and feature requirements demonstrating an existing use case that describes the information exchanges? Has the project team completed a data model for all shared components? Has the project team mapped the data elements and the data models in the ONAP common information model? Has the project team reviewed the data models and use case artifacts with the modeling subcommittee? And is there a plan to address the findings of the information / data model review?
So we proposed that. What we ended up getting in was at least having, at least for Frankfurt, we had the and El Alto, since Frankfurt, I guess. Maybe it was Dublin even. We've had the projects identify at least what the API data model is and where it is. At least that was a start. But we definitely have not gone through the extent of this checklist yet. But that was kind of the proposal.
To
help get us there.
That's a good one too. I think it's very very useful, and that's why we kind of mentioned it in this process, this way of working process page, because it's something that I think should be checked off, right? It's something that we, as an ideal, this is something that we want to work towards. Thanks, Andy. And also the use. So I started documenting some stuff, which maybe belongs sort of on a use case page instead of a use case sort of engagement tab under the modeling team. But essentially, the modeling team / us, the use case team, should be synergizing essentially with the data models and developing the data models and soliciting input and help and ideas from the modeling subcommittee to review and refine their contributions of the data model, which should go through similar sorts of stages. We create an input data model, we discuss it, and then we end up with a model that is ready for review and refinement. It goes to some sort of approval poll. The use case lead says, you know, we're ready for sort of baselining what we have in the data model and moving forward. And certainly, if you look at this checklist, many of these things are actually things that relate to how does the use case team sync up with the modeling subcommittee. You know, do you have all of your I's dotted and T's crossed? Do you have your data model stuff in place? And you know, maybe you need to share that with where you are with the modeling subcommittee. So that's why it's in both places. There's an M3 proposed checklist for modeling updates discussion under the use case engagement and as well as the modeling team. So I go for all of this because I think it would benefit us and you know them all leading the 5G use case teams as well for us to come up with a similar page, I think, with some similar details for the use case teams, right? So I started all of this wiki page stuff with the modeling team. You know, we all just started with the slide pack basically, and then I had talked to them a few times and sort of started this, and we captured some thoughts there, and from that this became the wiki page. So, and as you see, I think it's really good that the modeling team has pulled together fantastically, I think, and come up with something really, I think, meaningful, and they can point to and use and refine moving forward. Okay, I'll stop there for a second. Any thoughts and comments, Faraday? Okay, we've had a few people that joined here. Let's see if I'll go back to the slides. Still can't find Brian, so. Okay, so we have Andy on the call here. Thanks for joining, Andy. And for those of you who joined late, I'm just gonna touch on a key point here. So basically, we have, let me just show you the use case template so you have a view of it quick here. Let's see. I think it's here. This is it here, I think. Yeah, okay. So you'll recall if you've been regularly attending our calls here. At one point you said, you know, in R7, which was way out there at one point, but is kind of right around the corner now, we said, gee, look, you know, this template is actually pretty useful for us to adopt, and I'll let Andy talk to it, but just to show it to you for a second. And for documenting how we might want to create our wiki pages in R7. And so I went to Ala at the requirements subcommittee, and I showed that to her. And I said, you know, maybe we want to use this for R7 for documenting our use case / requirements. And she wanted to kind of keep things at a higher level than that. She said that, you know, this sort of stuff is more, you know, you can do whatever you want with your use case pages. And you know, you can incorporate whatever you feel is appropriate for use case pages. But basically all she's kind of looking at now, when you look at her proposal page, and I don't have a link to it, unfortunately, but I can easily give you the sense of what it is. So basically, her proposal pages just has this now. It just has the business driver. So it has, for her requirements, you say, you know, I have this particular requirement to enhance, I don't know, whatever plug and play or onboarding. And you describe these kind of summary, business impacts, and so forth. And so it's at a very, very high level, right? And that's fine. So it's more of a guidance directive, you know, a very high level steering sort of group. So that's where she's kind of focusing her work on. This group is much more oriented towards, you know, what do we need to do to actually make these use cases happen, right? So technical discussions, engaging PTL discussions and technical talks and so forth. And so she said, you know, she suggested that let's move this call, you know, and this work under the architecture, which I said, fine. And we're basically free as a group to, you know, to do whatever we think is right for updating our use case template, right? Or whatever you want to call it, a requirements template. So that's where we are. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Andy here. So let me just capture also Jared, which one too. And also, I don't know, Andy, we also have this other page too, right? I don't know if these are useful to you.
So what are you looking for, Ben?
So there were these other pages. I don't know if they're, this is the current use case template, which I think we should sort of take ideas from this page and merge them into this page, which is our current use case template. And then there is this other page, which maybe, I don't know, you want to delete or whatever, but you can talk to it. So.
Okay. Yeah, so on this page, this is a proposed functional template for use cases. So what we saw was the other use case template was good for kind of at a very high level describing, you know, the topic and how to actually begin a use case and start development in ONAP. What was kind of missing though was what functionality was trying to be achieved. And so we kind of put this together. This is something we've used similar things in MEF and TM Forum and other groups as well. And I won't go far back as I could. But we always found this very useful in kind of describing how systems of systems interact with each other. But we start with a very high level, describing just, you know, the overall use cases. So what functionality are you trying to achieve, you know, for your specific case? So if we have a set of high-level requirements that are related to each other, in this case, you know, this example is from VNF SDK. If we're to look at that set of functionality as a black box from the outside, you know, who are the actors? Who are the users? Who's going to interact with that black box? And then you start looking at, well, how are they going to interact with the black box? In this particular case, you see there's VNF suppliers, marketplace operators, service providers. And then you describe, okay, what's the set of functionality? What are the things that they're going to do with the black box? And you start describing those as the use cases. So those ovals kind of represent the high-level package of functionality. Now this one actually breaks it out between what they're building during a specific release, what's being put to a future release. You know, that's optional. You can do that. But it also shows you that you can modularize things. So I can take a set of functionality, and I think the one that was interesting here was manage marketplace, that they've actually included a set of sub-functions sub-functional groups within it. So you can kind of break things out and modularize a bit, and that's pretty helpful too. What we're really trying to get at is, so if you scroll down, we've kind of introduced this idea of a use case template. So for each of those ovals above, you kind of want to formalize and describe that set of functionality in a more detailed sense. So we've applied this template in other SDOs, as I said, and we found it very useful because it helps you think about that set of functionality, how you interact with the outside world, how you interact inside, as well, because there could be related sets of functionality that you need to interact with. So it helps you describe, what you're doing, right? You know, who's using it, and then also what the interactions are. So you start with, identifying the name of it. What am I calling this set of functionality or this use case? Then I describe, well, what am I interacting with? And these are actors, you know, from the outside. Those are the stick bodies. But you can also show other components. So if you know that you're going to interact with a specific component, and it could be a system component, because, you know, especially if you're doing these things as part of a system of systems, you want to show what you're interacting with. You want to provide a quick, short description, what you're doing, what's the value of what you're doing, who's useful for. and it's kind of motivating that. Then you also want to identify the points of contact. Who's maintaining this? Because all too often, sometimes things get started and you don't really have tracking. The wiki helps with this, but it's good to show who the point of contact is. Who are the authors or maintainers? And in ONAP, it could be a project, right? We might even just say this project's in charge of it.
And I'm kind of already in the template. That's this.
Yeah. So you probably have those people in your other template. Yep. So let's go through this, then we'll talk about maybe the path forward is kind of merging them, right? Yeah. I think that's kind of what we want to get to.
Yeah.
And then preconditions. What are you assuming is going to happen? What are you assuming has already happened before you fire off that set of functionality? Are there certain pieces of inventory that need to be in place? What are you assuming the current state is as you're going into this? What triggers the set of functionality? It's a request from a specific type of user. Is it receiving some kind of threshold crossing or alert? All those types of things you can describe as the trigger. And then the steps. And if you think about the steps as kind of an interaction diagram, what am I interacting with? Starting with the trigger and then showing the various things that you're interacting with. Talk about things like information that's being exchanged. So even a request, right, is a piece of information that's coming in. It's not just, hey, request. It's a request with something, right? So what am I requesting? What are the attributes of what I'm requesting? And this is where we start modeling, information modeling at least, because it's on these interactions that we kind of infer that there's information attached to that. And we can start dropping that down into a little bit more detail, maybe a high level information model, just kind of more focused on describing, I received an alert. Well, what information's inside an alert? Or I need to make a request to another system, or I need to get a piece of inventory information. Well, what am I retrieving? What am I querying on? And those are the things that we want to kind of describe in the interactions. And typically you do the sunny day scenario, but you can also put exceptions in if you want to. And that's where you see, two steps below, there's the exception paths. And then post condition. So what do you expect as a result of kind of going through that interaction or performing that set of functionality? What's produced? What's the new information that's produced? And typically there is new information, even if it's just associating existing information together. Are there related use cases? What are the related sets of functionality? And then any other assumptions that you might want to put down beyond your preconditions. Tools, references, artifacts. This gives you a place to say, okay, do we have anything in Jira that's kind of tracking this? Do we have pieces of information modeling that this relates to? All those types of things. Do we have a set of sequence diagrams that we can point to? Which we can actually do in Papyrus as well. That's our information modeling tool, but it also allows us to do interaction diagrams. So all those types of things we can kind of list here. Are there existing APIs that are defined that are related to this use case? All those types of things are really good pieces of information to help us produce modeling. So we kind of focused a bit here on kind of using the use cases, the interactions especially, to help identify information, what information is produced, what information is consumed. And you see those lines written in here. And that helps us understand how does this functionality relate to the information model? Do we have already information classes defined in this area that can be reapplied for this set of functionality? Are there new pieces of information that we haven't modeled yet? And that helps us drive our modeling subcommittee requirements for that release, or even we can start working on it in a prior release. So it helps us kind of make sure that the modeling work that's happening, the data modeling work that's happening, the API definitions that are happening, kind of all work together to support this set of functionality. So that's the story behind the template. We've made good use of it in other SDOs. I've seen a few places in ONAP that try to use similar things, which is good. But I think it'd be a good practice just to put in place as we're developing use cases to start, driving these types of systems engineering discipline around them. And then we can at least make sure that all the moving pieces that we have in ONAP actually integrate together later on. And that's the ultimate benefit, is integration. That's what we're trying to achieve. Any questions or comments?
I think it's pretty good, and it does provide some clarity. It makes people think before they propose a use case, define the assumption, define the preconditions, define what triggers and steps that flow. So it's very good.
And you'll see, you know, as people develop the use cases, each of these elements will mature a bit, because you'll start with that, your high level ideas, and it'll be pretty sparse, right? And it doesn't mean you have to have all the details fleshed out to fill this in, but start with it, and then you'll start filling in more details as you achieve them through your analysis. So it becomes kind of a living artifact in that way.
Yeah, I think this is great, actually. I mean, having done a lot of architecture, you know, being a system engineer, having done a lot of architecture work in my life, this, and having worked with formal UML, I think also when I first learned about it and took classes and stuff on it, like these are the sorts of things that I would expect someone thinking about a use case to first ask themselves and to first spell out, right? Like, what is this use case about? You know, what are its actors, and you know, what happens in it, and what happens before and after. So I think a lot of it is just fantastic and commonsensical in many ways, and are very really basic and fundamental. So I think many, if not all, of these things I think should be incorporated into our use case templates. But that's my opinion. Do other people agree, or you know, does it sound good to them? Should we? So I have the blessing from Allah essentially to update this stuff. So you know, we can update this page with what you think is appropriate.
So I wonder a bit how this relates to basically the new approach with requirements, because as you said, the first step now is to basically only have the business drivers, a very high level description of what you want to do. Is this a further breakdown of each such requirement that is done in the next step, or what is the relationship?
Yeah, I think that's a good question that we all need clarity on, is exactly what's the requirements committee doing? What are they delivering, right? And what can we expect from them? If it is a set of high level requirements and functionality, you would expect them to at least, you know, maybe even start with that diagram we had at the beginning there, to identify, you know, what the actors are, what sets of functionalities are, and then maybe even providing the description of that functionality in words or a set of high level requirements. I think that's what we might expect from them, but I don't know. I think we need to formalize that somehow.
Yeah, it's not clear to me if this requirements subcommittee is more reviewing requirements or actually doing any further breakdown. Because if they're just sort of looking at the proposals and recommending that they move forward, then the output would still only be the business driver, basically, at that level.
Yeah, Oscar, that's a really good observation. I think just from what I've seen from the and I think at this point, maybe let me just stop sharing for a second and find, I'm going to dig through my email, which might have some sensitive stuff. Let me just, I'll find Ala's email where she points out the stuff here, and then I'll find it pretty quickly. So I think, you know, a picture's worth a thousand words. I think I can find an example of where she's pointing us to this release here. Let me see here. So, okay, here. Let me just. Yes. Okay. All right. I found it. All right. So let me share again. Okay. So if we look, this is the requirements subcommittee page now, and I'll put a link to it in today's notes here. So let's see. Okay, so the requirements subcommittee couple pages here. And so if we look at their directive, their primary subcommittee is responsible for bringing functional and non-functional requirements into ONAP releases. This excludes thirds that this stage security and closed loop requirements. The requirements subcommittee does not make decisions regarding releases to functional architecture or internal functioning of projects or different modules. And this is, you know, this is the sort of statement we want to keep us at a high level. And what we are doing is specifically going diving into architecture and, you know, and the internal functionings of projects. So, you know, we're this meeting here is much more oriented towards diving into stuff, right, and diving into details and technical details. So it's a support group for the TSC chair and TSC. The requirements subcommittee is advisory by nature and authoritative. It provides advice on projects, the TSC and TSC architecture subcommittee. It operates on a rough consensus basis. And if we look at the page where we're looking at the, you know, what our Guilin release so far, what it's been proposed, you know, the you see that the direction I think has changed greatly, right? So let me copy this into it as well. Current proposals. Seven. I mean, you know, there's only a couple, and of course there'll be many more, I'm sure, as we come closer to May. But you see, I mean, so we have this on board at CCLS04 to compliant BNF packages. I mean, it's just an executive summary, business impact, market impacts, funding and financial impacts, the things that we had in our business section, right? So I think what we have in our page, if you look at our current pages now, I mean, we have a business drivers section. Actually, we should probably incorporate this into this template as well. But, so I think Ala is just focused on this section, essentially, right? And of course, I think that should also be part of our wiki pages too. So to your question, Oscar, I think, you know, they're not necessarily mutually exclusive. I think the thing, you know, the details we have related to those high level driver type, you know, road mapping TSC type questions are should also be part of the page. And they're sort of relevant. I mean, you know, they're sort of in this kind of part of the description, right? It's more of a, why are we doing this use case and kind of thing, right? So I would see essentially the, you know, that business driver section is a, you know, is a sub point of the description essentially. So, but certainly I think we you know, R7 is the first release where the ALA's requirements subcommittee is kind of being used, right? So I think we're still learning how to divvy up, you know, what's where, right? So that's my thoughts anyway. Anybody else have thoughts? Okay, Oscar, did that help? No?
maybe. I think we need to think about where in the process that these things actually fit in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. And that's exactly why I think we don't really have a process. And that's exactly why I think this you know, this would be useful for us as a team to develop, right? A sort of a use case process and defining what do we do at each of these steps, and we can all agree and discuss what should happen, where and when, and what should we document. So I totally agree with you. I think this that just points to the need for creating a more well-defined, you know, process, right?
Hey Ben, so I also have another question with regards to ownership. I guess with the new proposal on the requirements, with use cases, it was very clear that the use case team would kind of own everything around the use case, the template, you know, they managed the entire process. But with the requirements committee, it's still not clear whether it will be whether the PTLs are responsible for incorporating them into the into their projects, or you know, who actually maintains these things and follows up on them.
Yeah, so I think that is also something that will evolve in R7, just because you know this. So R7's process, I think, is a little new, a little different from the previous six releases because of this new shift in focus to this requirements subcommittee. So I've engaged Ella, and she is kind of leaving the ownership kind of to us, right? So basically, we as a team and all these various use case teams, but collectively as these use case requirements teams, I think are going to own the details and the ownership of your use case lower level information, right? I think so. It's who are we accountable to? Is sort of what you're asking also. So I think we're accountable to three things. Number one, I think maybe four things. So number one, the requirements. I think when at the start of a release, and these are the sorts of things. It's a good question. I think these are the sorts of things we want to document in the process, right? So number one, we should be reporting to at the start of a release, here's the things we want to propose into the release, right? Number two, if you have architectural impact, I think you should touch base with that. Number three, I think if you have modeling impact, you should touch base with that. So you show those modeling impacts, we're accountable to at least give our thoughts, I think, to the modeling subcommittee of here's what we think there is impacts. And number four, I think, we're in many ways accountable to the project management, the TSC. And there's where they do a lot of making sure you have your I's dotted and T's crossed with this stuff, right? So they say at M1 and at M0, you should have a lot of these things defined. And I think the use case teams own this, right? And this was echoed by Ala as well, who said, the use case team should own their own detail. And I don't know that Ala kind of owns this either. I mean, she's kind of collecting the information to be, as she had said, to be a adjunct to the TSC as an advisory kind of board to the TSC, right? And the TSC makes a lot of high-level decisions of, this should be included in the release or not. Did that make sense? Or did anybody want to add any thoughts to what I just said?
I think that helps, Ben. But I guess, as the process evolves, since it's new for R7, I guess these discussions are, just going to evolve, basically. We'll
Absolutely.
Probably get more information.
Yeah. So I think all those things that you're asking are great. And I think we need to figure it out as a team, basically. So I think, week to week on this call, we can discuss those kinds of questions and together as a team come to an agreement, and then we can socialize it. We agreed here, and then talk on the architecture calls and on the 5G calls and on Monday call, Ala's call too, to share our thoughts, right? So I'm in contact with Ala, and she is in agreement with where we're headed. So I think she doesn't have any problem with updating the template and stuff and things like that. So okay. All right. So with the last 5 minutes here. So Andy, I think one thing that would be good is maybe we should just, just cut and paste this whole table in maybe. And I don't really see a problem with that. Does anybody have does that sound like a good idea, Andy, or are you okay with that? Anyone?
Sorry, I was on mute. So I think it was a great idea. And I think we should probably pick a few use cases to maybe even start utilizing the template.
Right. Okay.
And the diagram too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
we didn't show the interaction diagram here, but I think I think that would be useful too, because I know we've used interaction diagrams a lot in external API, and they've proven very useful.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to copy this all in, and I think it's really good. I personally don't see a problem with using it in the use case template. So I'm just going to put it here. And then I think we should have had the business driver stuff in. I don't know why it wasn't there before. So let me put that there as well. And I'll communicate to Ala that we updated this so she's aware as well. Let's see. So I created this business drivers thing. I'm pretty sure I put it here. Yeah, here it is. Okay. All right. So I'm just going to copy this in as well. Okay, I'll put it here, I think. All right. Okay, and let me see if there's any overlap. Let's see, so, zoom in a bit here. And the only maybe overlap is sort of points of contact is kind of already in this development status sort of, but I guess maybe the points of contact here should be the, the use case lead should be identified or should be mentioned. Key use case members and code contributors. Maybe to be a little clear, it's not just the PTLs and stuff. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay. Other than that, I think this looks great. It's shocking that it was kind of missing from the previous template, but I think this looks good. I'm just gonna make it a little bit more consistent with the rest of the text here, which has stuff kind of highlighted in blue. So I'll do that here. And do I have this as a, let's see, I think we're using headings, right? Let me see. Yeah, heading one. This heading is a heading one, okay. Okay, good. Get rid of the one table for each use case. Okay, I think to be consistent with, you're using the text, okay. All right, good, that was a little bit more consistent, I think, with the rest of the page, right. Okay, any other thoughts on this process update template page? So, I mean, a couple of people brought up some really good points, Oscar and Raghavan. So I think as a next step, I'll let Ala know that we update this page. I attend the modeling calls, but there's also the requirements call happens at the same time. So, I joined each call for some short period of time, half and half basically. But you might also want to join the requirements call just to get plugged into what are the R7 new requirements and stuff that are being considered and the level of detail they want. And because the direction of that meeting has changed dramatically, attending that call will probably give you a sense of what it's about. So in the last couple of weeks, it's really just been presentations of sort of what, these new requirements, I think. Okay, so let's see, we touched on a lot of things. I think we touched on just about everything. So there was, there is a best specification review out. If you're wondering, Alec Gupta, which was kind of unreachable, and he's unreachable because he's on medical leave, Albino is the lead taking over temporarily, I guess, for I was on a call actually, for Alloc, and he's leading one of the people he's working with, Trevor, is leading a review for the best event specification, and that's going to get incorporated into the Read the Docs page, I think, when that review is over. And then the ONUS conference coming up, I don't think we have time to talk about that, we're already past time. So that's coming up, and there's a proposal page as well for that. There was a discussion back and forth this week about a panel discussion, so for the December 5 Plugfest that we had that skipped the panel. I think that they're going to have that panel at that point. So that's one of the pieces of data that you might be interested in. Okay, anyway, we're at time, so thank you, everybody. For all your input, a lot of great ideas, and thank you, Andy, for the presentation. Have a great day. Thank you.
No worries. Thanks, Ben. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye.